All right, let's talk about the State of the Union and find out what you think about it. In fact, let's find out what the opposition party in North Dakota thinks about Barack Obama's speech last night. Jason Flores, I had the opportunity to meet Jason a couple times now. And full disclaimer, I enjoy debating him. I don't agree with his opinions, but I think he does this in a way that makes me want to have that debate with him. And so Amy said, let's get him on. And I said, all right with me. Jason, good to have you on News and Views.
Thanks for having me on again, Joel. I appreciate it.
Grade that speech last night for me.
Well, it's the same grade he's probably gotten for the last 4 or 5 years, because it was pretty much the exact same speech that he's given for the last 4 or 5 years.
I want a different take. I'll give you a different take, and then you can tell me where I'm wrong.
All right.
I thought he set the bar way lower. I thought other speeches that he's given at State of the Union, he's come out and he had this, that, and the other thing. And instantly in my mind, I was like, you're never going to get that. It's not going to happen. You can tell the American public that. But in this particular speech, the things that he said that he was going to try to do in the next year were things that he really felt he could do. And the other things weren't specific. And I'm curious if you noticed that tone.
Well, I think I did. I think he spent the last 4 or 5 years really trying to go after these huge picture kind of attempts. You know, he came into office saying he was going to change Washington, and yet more than any president recently, he's finding his agenda not being able to be implemented because it's just wrong for the American people. You know, he's bitten off really big projects, and he's tried to go it alone on all of these, and he said he would go it alone last night, and yet he's not getting any of those done. So I think, yeah, his speech last night reflected a little more of the political reality, and also reflected just what he's going to be able to get done, which hasn't been anything.
Jason Flores is he's executive director of the North Dakota GOP party. Jason, take off your hat of speaking for and representing the Republican Party for just 1 second. And put yourself as an aide to President Barack Obama, and know that you've got a Congress that is against you on the House side that is not going to allow you to move any initiative forward. Wouldn't you tell him to go on his own?
I think it's tempting to do that, Joel, but when he tried to do that and go it on his own in the past, you end up with a health care bill that didn't get any support from the other side and has been an abject failure. I mean, yeah, there's things you can do as an executive and that you're authorized to do by the Constitution. But what this president has done has gone way beyond that, saying in the State of the Union, in his update to Congress that, well, I need Congress to act. How many times did he say, I need Congress to act? I need Congress to act. And then in the same breath said, well, but if you're not going to do that, I'm just going to go it alone anyway. So never mind that.
But let me give you an example of where the loggerhead hits and there's never going to be any give. Okay. Do you, as a Republican, believe in minimum wage?
That there should be some minimum wage?
Yes.
Sure.
Okay, many of your colleagues don't. I mean, Michelle Bachmann was on air and she said, I do not believe in minimum wage. They finally got, she kept talking about Australia and where minimum wage had gone to in Australia, which obviously wasn't a fair example because we haven't done that here in America.
Sure, but Joel, this entire minimum wage debate is just a red herring across the real problem. The problem is that this economy isn't creating jobs. You don't need to worry about minimum wage if you're creating the jobs and if the economy is growing, because then you're getting better jobs and you're creating more opportunity for people. That's what you do when you impose these government programs and government controls on things when you don't have any ideas to stimulate the economy and you're too busy getting in the way of economic growth to let the economy do its job and create jobs.
Jason, I don't disagree with that. In fact, the perfect example is the very people listening to us through 660 right now. They don't have to worry about minimum wage in Williston because anybody who would make Williston or make minimum wage could get a job somewhere else for more. So I don't dispute that. It's supposed to be just a starter. Can we get that? And by the way, I want to get out there. The House passed the Farm Bill, well over the 250 votes for it. So obviously this thing's going to be fast-tracked. The Senate wasn't the issue, so we will have a Farm Bill.
No, that's great news. I wish the president would have mentioned that in his speech last night.
I do too.
That's the kind of, that bill, for all of its ups and downs and all of its changes, I mean, that went through really the process it's supposed to. You had separate bills. They met in conference. They disagreed. They brought it back. They negotiated. I mean, that's what our government's supposed to be about, not this go-it-alone executive fiat style of governing.
Well, but I think the Farm Bill, Jason, can be used as an example of the type of politics where you don't do anything. And let me give you my example, and then you can tell me how wrong I am, okay? They came up with a bipartisan approach to the farm bill to the U.S. House. Chairman Lucas, the Republican who is in charge, came up and said, don't mess with this. We've got a great bargaining position with the Senate. I need these votes. The ranking member of the minority went up to his caucus, who was mad as hell at him because he had had cuts for food stamps in there, and he said, don't mess with this. We can get this farm bill done. You're going to have to give a little. And it was your side of the aisle that blew apart that farm bill to the point where we're talking about it in the end of January. So my point is this. If you look at them and know that they're willing to blow apart a farm bill, which, by the way, Kevin Cramer, your congressman, my congressman, but the one that your party supports, was one of the people that blew apart the past farm bill. This shouldn't have taken this long, Jason. And that's what the president's message was last night. Do your job. Why is that wrong for him to say that?
Well, I don't think it is wrong for him to say that. And I think the farm bill, as I said, in the midst of its passage, did some sides overplay their hands and try to get more than they ever probably should have gotten. Maybe that's the case. We ended up with a good compromise bill that made some of the reforms to the SNAP benefits that were so politically dangerous at the time, and we got a little bit beyond where the Senate was and not quite to where the House was. If the president wants to talk about doing his job, though, he can get on the phone that he's referenced so many times recently, talk to Harry Reid, and say, hey, pick up one of these 170-plus bills that the House has passed and do something about it. Because not all of those bills that the House has passed have been full of crazy partisan rhetoric. There's jobs bills in there. There's regulation cutting in there. There's some of the same streamlining of things that the president tried to talk about last night, and they're sitting with no action at all in the Senate.
Let's go back to minimum wage on that, Jason, because you talk about two approaches. We all acknowledge that we want better pay for those among us that are really being left behind in the economy. But the answer that I hear so often from Republicans is they want tax credits for people to hire people at a higher starting wage. All that is me subsidizing someone's business that's driving around with a Cadillac talking to me about, oh, my God, have you seen my latest Corvette and I can't afford to pay my workers more?
Well, Joe, I think you're falling into some pretty harsh stereotypes there in terms of what business owners.
I can tell you what business owner I'm talking about.
Okay. I mean, maybe you have one of them. You know some different ones in the small businesses across North Dakota and the Midwest than I do. I mean, if you look at a group like the NFIB, who talks about minimum wage, and they're representing a ton of small businesses, they're looking at any changes to that minimum wage as something that's going to have an impact on those businesses' ability to operate. Now, I don't question the fact that there's Americans out there who are on hard times, and there's more Americans on hard times now since the president has taken office than there were before. And we've got to do something about that.
I disagree with that.
I just don't know that particular...
I've heard that said, Jason, and I disagree with that premise. I think that more of us got stuck paying the bill for the wealthy. And I'll give you an example.
Go straight to the Census Bureau and look at the numbers. Look at the numbers of Americans in poverty, and it's gone down. You look at the number of Americans who have been out of work for more than 6 months. That rate is higher than it has been under any current president. You look at Americans who have just flat out given up on searching for a job. The labor force participation rate is the lowest that it's been in 35 years. And that the unemployment rate that the president talked about in the first 2 minutes of his speech last night, that it's gone down. The only real reason it's going down is because people are dropping out of the labor force. And that is simply unacceptable.
But you and I both know that the economy itself is redirecting itself. Yet there are going to be less people on assembly lines in the economy of 20 years from now than ever before.
And sure, we're at a time of fundamental change.
Exactly.
But in a time when the economy is already facing some of these structural dangers, why are we as government constantly and continually getting in the way? Take Obamacare,
where?
For example. Every deadline, every law, every piece of that has changed at one time or another simply because of executive fiat or what was politically expedient
at the time. Jason, I can tell you why. Because people like me with a fake knee shouldn't be considered a pre-existing condition. That's why.
And I agree with that, Joel.
Why can't Republicans at least have supported that? Because they felt it was an intrusion by government into health care. And they felt that the actuarial data that the blues of the world out there get to pick their own. And people like me got sick of being told you can't switch jobs because you have a pre-existing condition.
Well, I think that some of those pieces, you know, also the piece where you let students stay on their parents' private insurance longer, you know, until a greater age. I think that some of those pieces possibly could have passed. The problem is that when the Obama administration was pushing this through, when they had full Democratic control, they pushed this through and they went so far beyond what was possibly accepted. Joel, you go back to the minimum wage. If this was such a great idea, and there's so much agreement on it, then why didn't the president do it in those first 2 years when he was in office, when he could have passed any single thing he wanted to with full one-party control in Washington?
So here's the point, Jason. Minimum wage right now, if you raise it to 10 bucks, let's use 10 bucks as an example, that is less than 20% of what any congressman makes. I realize it's a starter. I get that. But my point is, isn't there a lot of hypocrisy from members of Congress? If they had to live off minimum wage, if they, I took the SNAP challenge. I lived off the food stamps for a week, you know, based on, I went and bought them. I get that. Yep. But I did that. What you find out is you're not going to go hungry. You're just going to eat really bad food. In fact, people say, well, geez, you know, look at people on food stamps. You know, they sure don't look skinny to me. Well, you know what? You eat ramen noodles all day. You're not going to be skinny by the end of the day, but you're going to eat cheap.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, there is no question that we need to have a supplemental nutrition program like we have that goes in and complements the things that we're already doing with minimum wage, that complements the things that we're already doing with Medicaid expansions, for example, to make sure that we have a viable safety net for these people.
Jason, you want to take some phone calls?
Yeah, I can do that.
Let's do it. Hang with me. The executive director of the Republican Party in North Dakota, he is good enough to give us his time, and we're taking your phone calls. Let's do it. Tom, you are on with Jason and me, Joel Heitkamp. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, Jason, I'd like to, I guess, challenge you on a couple of things. Irregardless of who was voted in as president, McCain or Obama, they had to deal with massive layoffs from the Bush administration. 700,000 jobs a month lost. So to say that this has spiraled out of control under Obama is an out-and-out falsehood. Number two, it seems like the Republican Party likes to center their economic programs around tax cuts. Now, in 93, I believe, President Clinton pushed for the largest tax increases ever. Newt Gingrich led the charge that if this happens, the economy's going to tank and everything else. And we went on to 6-7 of the best years this country's ever seen. And they said the same thing when Obama got his tax increase. And we're still creating jobs. And the Bush tax cuts didn't create any jobs. Explain that.
Okay. Thanks, Tom. Jason, your answers.
Sure. Well, first, I don't recognize that as President Obama took, or I do recognize that as President Obama took office, there were challenges facing our nation. There's no question about it. But think of you, Tom, and your job, Joel, and yours or mine. If I was still blaming the person that was here 6 years ago for the problems that I had now, and yet I had 6 years to go about doing whatever I wanted. The first 2 years of those, I had carte blanche to put in place whatever program I wanted with a House and a Senate that were on my side, and yet things still haven't turned around. In fact, they've continued to get worse, or at the very best, stagnate. I don't think I'd still have my job if I was still trying to blame that 6 years ago. If you talk about the Bush tax cuts not doing anything, well, I disagree with that, and mostly evidence based on the fact that if they hadn't done anything, then why did a divided Congress vote to put all but 1% of those tax cuts back into place and make them permanent? If they were such a terrible idea, then why did this president sign a bill that made them permanent?
Well, because there was some horse-trading going on. I mean, you know that, and I know that. But look at the auto industry, for the example that Tom just gave us. This auto industry in America was dead. Chevrolet was gone. Can you imagine America without Chevrolet? And yet, because of what happened, you know, and that's my argument against, I don't think it's as bad in the economy as what the Republicans are making it out to be. And I also don't believe it's as good as what the Democrats say the recovery's been. I think that we're doing okay as a nation. I look at the markets, and somebody got into a huge debate with me recently about their big fear of Obama. You know, the reason they couldn't get out from underneath their bed in the morning was because of redistribution of wealth. Jason, there was no bigger redistribution of wealth in the world than the bailout that happened at the end of the Bush administration. I mean, there really wasn't. My kids are going to be paying on that debt for a long time.
Well, and we're going to be paying on all of this debt for a long time. I mean, since he's taken office, and you can be careful with some numbers around the transition period, but we've added over $5 trillion to the debt since Obama's been in office. And yet when he was running for office in 2008, Joel, he was there in Fargo on camera calling President Bush unpatriotic and un-American for having $4 trillion in debt. So now would he say the same thing about himself today?
Well, I go back to what Dick Cheney said. I go back to how every party, when they're in power, doesn't believe debt is that big of a thing. And when they're out of power, they think it's the most outrageous thing in the world. And Dick Cheney is the ultimate hypocrite. And of course, you know I'm no big Dick Cheney fan. My point is this, Jason. Is this presidency already, because of last night's speech and both of our recognitions, that there was nothing that big and bold in this other than minimum wage, which we both know is DOA with this Congress? Is this presidency really on autopilot?
I think it is. I think it has to be at this point. I mean, unfortunately, you've got too many people talking about 2016 already, and we need people doing the job in Washington right now. I think the House is doing that. They're passing bills, sending them to the Senate. The Senate isn't hearing them. If you run down this list of what Obama's doing, he's basically saying that he's not going to worry about Congress anymore. Well, unless you do what I want you to do, then I'll sign it. But if you're not going to do that, I'm just going to go out on these executive actions. Well, that's what he's doing with the EPA. That's what he's doing with the health care bill. That's what he's doing on so many things from a regulatory standpoint that are choking American industry. And choking industry is right here in North Dakota.
Jason, I enjoy visiting with you. I don't agree with you, and you don't agree with me, but it's always a good conversation. When you get your butt to wherever I'm at, whether I'm in Fargo, Bismarck, Minot, Williston, you come on by. Let's do some more radio, okay?
Sounds good, Joe. Thanks a lot. Okay. Thanks for having me on.
Good to visit with you. When we come back, your thoughts. Let's take some open phone calls. 237-5948.